Stella. I look at myself in the ornate mirror in the door of my wardrobe. I've put on a silky slip-style skirt and a stylishly baggy sweater, both in shades of blush. I clip in some hoop earrings. Behind me, my room at Grafton is a gorgeous garden paradise in hues of green. The wallpaper is printed with a grid of vines that climbs up to the crown molding. My bed's canopy is stretched with a deep emerald damask that makes me feel like I'm in an enchanted garden. Beyond the window is even more green, a long lawn bordered by thick woods, and farther off, Vermont's rolling mountains on the horizon. It's more nature than I've seen in years. The view from my Brooklyn apartment has one tree and a few pigeons. This is something else entirely. The word that springs to mind is majestic. My stomach rumbles anxiously. Tomorrow at this time, the first bake will be over. I try to keep myself from getting attached to the idea of making it too far into the competition. I haven't even unpacked my bag yet, just left it propped open in the corner, as I don't want to jinx myself. There are 5 other bakers, after all. And it's already been made clear that I don't have as much baking experience as them. Not even remotely. It was on the dossier they handed out. Our bios were right there for all to see. All the others with their incredibly polished photos and long list of baking expertise. And then there is mine, with a headshot I made Rebecca take of me in the park, and below that, a description of my next-to-nothing experience. I'll be lucky to last through the first day. I go to my dressing table and take my time putting on my lipstick. Shaking my hands through my hair, I scoop it up into a messy bun and secure it with a silver pin. I've promised myself to try to take care of my appearance. Maybe not in the way I used to, but at least to make a true effort. I am going to be on television after all, not sitting around my apartment where no one will see me. So far, so good. My head is still fuzzy from my nap earlier. I'd had the most delicious dream where I was friends with Betsy Martin and she and I were sharing recipes. When I leave my room to go down to dinner, the house feels surprisingly quiet. I look up and down the empty hallway and worry suddenly that all the other contestants must be downstairs already. I shouldn't have fallen asleep. Then I could have spent more time getting ready. It's bad form to be late to a dinner hosted by Betsy Martin, even if she's not in her judging capacity tonight, or so the itinerary says. She may not be judging our baking, but she will certainly be watching us closely. I try to suppress a naive hope that she will form an instant liking to me. I feel a sharp pang of anxiety at the thought that her first impression of me might be that I'm someone who can show up on time. I pick up my pace, walking quickly down one long hallway to the end, then turning down another. I'm trying to retrace my steps from earlier, but that was pre-nap, and I clearly wasn't paying enough attention when I arrived. Now, I'm having trouble remembering exactly which corridor is which. I come out onto a tiny landing. It is decorated with a giant oil portrait of a man standing in a field. He is handsome, a bit of an arrogant tilt to his head, which reminds me of some of the men I've dated in Brooklyn. He holds a hunting rifle. In his slender arms, it looks more like a prop than a tool made for killing. At his side, a brown retriever looks loyally up at him, a pheasant dangling from its mouth. A small gold placard affixed to the bottom edge of the frame reads, Richard Grafton, 1945. I take the stairs down to the first floor, but find myself trapped in a sort of odd basement with one door that looks like it leads outside. I turn back the way I came, continuing up 2 flights. Here, I am confronted with another empty hallway. I follow it until it abruptly ends at 3 closed doors. Feeling claustrophobic, I impulsively choose the one on my left, wishing I had a piece of string to lead me back in case I've made the wrong choice. The room I enter is dim, and the air feels dense and stagnant, as though the oxygen inside is just as old as the furniture. I walk through another room containing a billiards table. I listen for the murmur of voices, the scuff of footsteps, anything to let me know I'm not alone. But everything is deathly silent. I remember an old Twilight Zone episode where everyone on Earth has disappeared. My armpits prick with adrenaline. I'm grateful I decided against the silk top I'd considered. Trying not to panic, I start moving a bit more quickly, dashing across to the next door. It opens onto a shadowy sitting room. The curtains are drawn. A trio of overly stuffed chairs gather around an elaborate mantelpiece topped with a large brass clock inside a dome of glass. I listen to it tick. If I could just get to some sort of open space where I could orientate myself or hear other people's voices, I might be able to get my bearings. But I'm starting to have the unpleasantly familiar feeling of hysteria creep up on me, and I'm not sure whether to laugh or cry. So I let out a strangled sort of chuckle. It bounces hollowly around the wood paneling. Where is everyone? You're fine, I tell myself. You're safe. Don't panic. But it is too late. My vision has started to blur at the edges. I close my eyes, an old trick my therapist taught me, counting to five as I breathe in. I hold my breath for a few seconds, then release the air as I begin to count down. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. Slowly, I feel some of the tension exit my body. As I open my eyes, I hear the creak of a door opening and footsteps through the wall to my left. There's another person here. Thank God. Relief washes through me. Hello? I call out. I don't wait for a reply. I rush to the door on the left wall and fling it open. The room on the other side is larger than the previous ones, with windows facing out over the woods. A wing-back sofa sits in the center of the room with a coffee table in front, holding a large vase with a massive bouquet of fresh irises. Another sign of life that brings me comfort. The sun sets a muted pink at the paned windows. I hear a sound on the far side of the room and make my way over to it. Hello, I call out again, edging my way toward the sofa. I suddenly worry that I haven't heard a person at all, that there is an animal loose inside. My throat is dry. I lean over the side, and there is a flurry of movement. It takes me a moment to make sense of what is happening. A scream rips from my chest as I trip backward. An elderly woman with snow-white hair crawls on her hands and knees across the floor. I feel the blood draining from my head. My legs go weak as I begin to lose consciousness.